Mr. Chadwick, Real 24. We're talking about a time when you were Company Sergeant Major of C Company, 1st Battalion DLI, with the Commonwealth Division in Korea, in and out of the front line. And we were discussing your role as Company Sergeant Major, and we got on to the sort of the looking after the men side. Did many of the men have trouble with Dear John letters and trouble, that sort of trouble at home?
Oh, you always get that. But fortunately, as different to the war, predominantly the lads weren't, majority of them weren't old enough to be married. So you had the Dear Johns on a lesser scale, the girlfriends writing to say we finished it, which was what we used to call the 4-day wonder.
What do you mean?
Well, lots to say, oh, Smudges had a letter, their lasses packed him in, and he's law, fearing law. Well, the bold Chadwick would walk in then and give him a fatherly talk. And 3 or 4 days later,
what would you say?
Look us on. If she's not willing to wait for you, she's not worth bothering about. It doesn't take her long to find somebody else. I don't think a lot about her. Or give it time. She might change or whatever. But whatever you think about yourself, you're, you know, that kind of talk. And it worked.
So
one man has went crackers. I can't remember his name now.
What happened to him?
Well, it was incredible. It was frightening. I was walking along the train, she confronted me with a rifle with a full magazine gun. And told me to stand back, he was going to blast me. Well, I had to talk him out of it. And believe you me, I did some talk there. Not the day.
What was his grievance with you? Or were you just
not with me at all.
You were just
I didn't know why he was fighting. He ran full on his earth to fight and all this. He was backloaded to the United Kingdom. He was medical discharge. He got here why actually.
So what other parts of the job were there? That's the sort of morale and side. What
patrol program, which covered a lot of the day, because what we used to do, the company commander and I, when we warned the patrols, we didn't do like other companies did. Tell them in the morning they were going out that night. But if you're all nighttime patrol and you couldn't go out by day, you'd be murdered. And what we used to do, we were going out at 8, we warned the patrols at 5 o'clock. So the last 3 hours before they went out, they'd no time to dwell on it. They had weapon cleaning to do, testing of weapons, drawing of ammunition, briefing, a hot meal, etc., etc. Kept their minds occupied right through the whole period. To the time we went through the wire, and then off we went.
Would you go with them?
No, not every patrol. I'm not that brave. No, but you couldn't do it. But I took patrols, and of course, as we've said previously, we had the standing patrol permanently. You had unite patrols at night permanently. Line room team, which is always stand to a first light anyway, everybody stands in the respective trenches, your ammunition's checked. First thing in the morning, the first return you send to battalion headquarters every morning by daylight is casualties and ammunition return. Killed, missing, wounded, and state of the ammunition. So that day, replenishments would be brought up the following night. Give the hours then the chance to prepare what requirements were. You might have spent spent thousands of rounds one night. Although you always have an increment A in your company position.
What's an increment A?
That's the chance you're cut off entirely. And you have that ammunition there as a reserve.
So you weren't supposed to use that?
You didn't use it. If we got short, I'd use it. I'm telling next morning to Arla that to dive in into increment A, so I wanted that, make it up that night. And then at night time, the ammunition would come out. At this stage, it's fair to say, we've now moved on to Hill 355.
When did you move up there?
Well, when we went in the line, straight after Christmas.
So January, right.
Which was better known as Little Gibraltar.
Could you describe Hill 355 and the sort of features around it?
Just like the Rock of Gibraltar.
What? That size?
Quite a big hill.
It was 355 the number of feet high it was.
355, yeah. The only problem with 355, it was quite sheer. Hence the name Gibraltar. Well then, the factors you've got to work on, your administrative factors are very important. So there's no way carrying parties could be staggering up down hills, although we have the Noggies, local enlisted Capcoms, carrying the Dutch Commonwealth lads, carrying ammunition, carrying food. But it was too much of a task on that particular position. And we had what they call a flying fox, a funicular, an aerial railway. But it was a Heath Robinson contraption. But bear in mind, the wounded had to go down there. So it was a big box on wires and pulleys. But it was electric. The engineers had fixed that up. So all the rations came up on the flying fox, all the wounded were taken out, all the sick were taken out, everything had to be done on this flying fox.
How stable was it?
Oh, it wasn't all that nice, but it was only used at night time in the dark, so you couldn't see what was happening before when you went down.
You'd been on it then?
I've been on it.
So when you say a box, what sort of box? I mean, was it covered in or just halved?
Just like a big box, you know, about that big.
3 foot?
Yeah, not about 8 foot long. More like a stretcher with sides on. And the dead went down there as well. Whatever. Everything that went up and down that part of 355.
And how many of these boxes would there be on the system, or was it just one?
Just one. Then come back, go down empty, come back full. Go back with empty case if you want to get rid of. You know, so that the area, the company position is kept clean and tidy, as much as you could.
So that's how your stuff came up, and that would happen at night.
At night time.
What about the lines on Little Gibraltar 355? What were they like? The trenches and positions.
Pretty good. But as I say, we were starting the winter. We were into winter, and the shelling was starting.
Much worse.
Much worse. Very heavy shelling. Very heavy.
So
the command post one night, I never laughed so much in all my life. Well, there's nothing to laugh at either. But we've got a direct hit. The lot came in, the roof, the lot. And there was a lad called Jewer. I knew he was in there, but I couldn't find him. And I was shouting. And I found him under a load of rubble. I said, are you all right? I wish I'd have got you a cup of tea. And I realised then that he'd had a knock, you know, or the shock of what, I don't know what it was. And when I got to him, look at me, there was nothing broken. It was gashed, face and that. And I said, are you all right? Murder. And I weighed him up, and he was on the Flying Fox 10 minutes later on his way out. But it was a terrific bang. Got a direct right over the command.
Did it? I mean, wouldn't you? I'm surprised you weren't all squashed underneath it, fell in.
Oh, we weren't killed. Everybody thought we were garbage and we were in there.
The roof collapsed.
Absolutely, just blasted the roof. You know, all the sand and everything just came. And the beams that were holding the command post were the best. They were that thick. The lot went in. Or we had the beam in there.
And what was the command post like? Or was it very similar to the other command? The
all the same.
No, no different.
Well, I was set in there, did the table, the right, a map table.
So just the same.
You know, patrol programs, but we had nails knocked in the wood to hang up patrol programs, all those. Just like a company office.
And that was your base?
That was my with base. Me and the company commander.
And, the men would be out in their hoochies.
Or running the trenches.
And what else would you be doing during the day? I think we'll look at the patrolling later.
Try to keep them busy. Digging, improving sandbagging, weapon cleaning, men going on patrol that night, try and get some sleep in the afternoon. And the day seemed to go, and then spasmodic shelling, everybody taking cover. The day just went by.
Would there be much other sorts of enemy activity other than shelling? I mean, was there much small arms fire directed at you?
Not a lot. All the fighting was done on the valley floor.
No, not much sniping then?
We did engage him, to be quite honest. A bit of it was to keep him occupied. You get a few shots coming over, and you can always hear a crack pump where it's coming. Some of the six or seven Johnnies over there on Matthew. Take them on, lads. Take them on. Right, they'd be blazing away. And sometimes they were right, they'd get a return of fire. But they'd be blazing, they were lapping it up, you know, they were Johnnies.
Now, Gibraltar was facing Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Was it just along the line then from where you'd been before, because they were near where you were when we were talking about the mortars, is that
right? Quite the same area, but only a mile difference or something of that nature.
So you could still, it's still the same situation as we described earlier.
That's right.
Now, what? So, any problem with air activity during the day?
Not a lot. They had the other aircraft coming over, and they had an aeroplane there, Asiatic Annie. This was phenomenal. You would do a relief in the line. Dead secret. Dead secret. That particular occasion, they relieved the Americans. The American Rangers. That very first night in the line, not just made a difference, but it showed you how good they were. Asiatic Annie wouldn't come up, she was a woman. And she had a fat lad, I don't know what kind of a megaphone they had up there. Here, as plain as day. Good evening, Dirt of Light Infantry. We see you have just moved back into the line. Why don't you go home instead of fighting for the American warlords and the financial investors? The very first night in, and we used to wear American helmets for the first 24 hours to keep them. Perchance it came over and they still think you're Americans. Or they knew that, we never knew. that aircraft used to be over.
So she'd be shouting from a megaphone in the aircraft.
In the airplane, absolutely.
Now, you mentioned one thing. You were almost trying to kid on that you were American so that they'd come over and try and get you.
I would go to us, I suppose,
because you'd be...
The Americans didn't control the valley floor.
So if they came over, you'd be out on the valley floor and ready for them.
Waiting for them. What we found, sadly, and it was a private soldier who said it to me, and if a private gave me such valuable information, when I went to an intelligence conference, I didn't say I thought of this, I'd say the name of the soldier. And we went out on patrol, and we had a bad night. And we opened up, and we killed nobody. And we didn't kill anybody, that is no doubt. And I could not fathom it. We had some wounded. We got back to his own FDLs. And Dapper Hall, Private Hall, said to me, in his proper tour of the accident, "My father must have got hand down there, doesn't he?" And I said, "No, I don't, I wish I did." He said, "It's easy. Johnny's on his knees." And he was. And what they were doing, we found out later. If we went out on patrol, we'll say Tuesday night, we found out that Johnny had come out Monday night, never bothered to make any activity, got as close to our lines as he could, and then laid up all Monday, camouflage. When we came out the FDLs on Tuesday night, he was waiting for us. And we were walking straight into him.
And that's what happened to you.
And he was kneeling, not standing, because we were firing waist high. He was kneeling. So we were firing over his head. The next time we went out, we fired low. And that was a private soldier. He said, "They're not minutes. Them fellas, they're not standing."
Now, about this patrolling, had the weapons or techniques changed from when you were doing it in Italy? Now, I know you...
We had snatch patrols, which were tricky.
Because in Italy, it was reconnaissance, fighting and standing.
Standing. Same there.
And same weapons?
Same weapons.
Nothing. What about same the grenades? Nothing had changed.
Same techniques. But the snatch patrol was the only difference. And that was to try and bring back a member of the opposite forces alive so that we could interrogate him. Now, can I just tell you a story which is as true as God is my judge? We captured a Chinaman on a snatch patrol.
How? Can you tell us? Can you tell us the story? How did you get him?
Well, we used to wait till they were moving back and then grab the last man. And the fight went on. And you would open up on the others. But they would run, try and get up positions. But you've got a live body. That was the thing, to bring him back. Brought him back. Brought him up to the perfect position. Straight down to the intelligence. And bring the interpreter. So he came up. And he refused to speak. Would not speak to anyone. This went on, gave him a rest, offered him cigarettes, drink, nothing. The interpreters kept talking to him, By now, the medical officer came up, Captain Arthur, and I believe he lectured about this when he went back to his civilian practice. The interpreter then said, he says he will die tomorrow at 12 o'clock. And he did. There was no room. He was examined, and they said he will be served to death. And I saw it happen. He was dead in that dugout. And there wasn't a mark on him. He wasn't suffering from shell shock. He was suffering from nothing. He said he literally will be served to death. It was incredible, was that? And that was the only snatch prisoner we ever got. The only one, and we got nothing out of him anyway, other than we knew his regimen by his colour flashes or whatever.
What did you think of your opposition, Johnny? You called him Johnny. Was that the nickname?
Johnny.
Why Johnny?
I don't know.
That's just what it was.
Called him Johnny.
What did you think of them as opponents, say, compared to the Germans?
Well, they are men to fight. And what, ironically, what they were masterful at, how they got, whether it was natural ability or not, they would come out on the valley floor with a mortar, one mortar. They would belt it down, fire off a dozen bombs and move. By they were accurate. What they call crash action. We used to train, but the degree of accuracy they had, we couldn't compete with. They actually have a mortar crew. Now, when a big action came in, there were thousands of them. They were screaming, they were blowing bugles.
I'll come to that separately, yeah, because that's a separate thing. Let's go back to the patrolling. So what was a typical... I know we've done this a bit, because I think you used some of this experience when you were talking about Italy. I think we discussed that at the time. But what was a typical patrol like that you would led out, say, on the valley, on the
bottom? 1 and 10, 1 and 12, because we weren't losing men at the rate of knots like we were in the war. So it always a typical complement of a patrol. Duration... 4 to 5 hours. And
weapons carried?
Automatics.
Sten. And what about grenades? You said you used...
At that time, that Australian thing had come into being, the Stirling, which was a replica of a Sten gun. Of course, 2 or 3 riflemen, the same who were always carrying a rifle.
And what grenades?
Well, we used to carry phosphorus with us. 36 grenades, of course. And the old 69.
That was your old favourite?
The immobiliser.
And so what would the procedure be? You'd go out?
Well, we have mine panels in front of the position.
Nine panels of mines?
That we laid.
You laid them?
Oh, yeah, to stop them. Because they could walk onto them. And where you have mine panels like that, you have gaps in the wire. For instance, you would go out item gap and come back a king gap. Because, as I stated previously, these men were adept at lying up all night. Now, originally, they were going out of item gap and coming back at item gap. Well, when you were coming back, they were waiting for you because they knew the route. So it was changed then. You go out of item, come in at King, come in at a different route back so that you weren't ambushed by these fellas lying up. Get out on the valley floor, predominantly 80-90% were fighting. We didn't do much reconnaissance because we had nothing to reconnoitre. We knew there was thousands of enemy on those features, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. So the main thing were getting out there and dominate that floor.
And that was so that you couldn't be surprised in the night.
Taken by surprise.
And how did you go about dominating the valley floor? I mean,
just whenever they sent a patrol out, which they did, engage them and let them know that the place was alive with us. So as far as we were concerned, to them, it was no go land. Keep them away.
How many would? How what size would their patrols be?
Pretty similar. Pretty similar. The worst night we had, which would come later, when sadly the major was killed, they were a bit bigger, but they'd laid out all night waiting.
So would you have a set route, or would you just roam about?
Well, you had an area to cover. You were sure they'd on the map. Of course, you couldn't be absolutely precise, but you'd do as best as you could that area. And you'd know that there would be patrols, both flanks, operating at the same time. So you'd be very careful for that famous word, friendly fire, which never happened with us, actually.
And what was the terrain like? I mean, you said it was a lot of heather and Scottish like. Was it difficult?
It was grass, rough grass. It's hard to. I'd say just like the Scottish Highlands is as good a description as you can get. But the trees, they were all naked. There was some. The old trees that were left were just burnt out trunks. They're very little.
And how close to the Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John would you get? Or were they behind the...
Some of the patrols actually went on to their positions. Like they tried to get onto ours. But that wasn't to be recommended.
Did you do that ever?
No, it was very tricky. It would have been ordered. One would have to do it. But they sent two or three special patrols out there, about three or four men. And they laid up for 24 hours.
Now, what would you do if you saw the enemy, the Chinese or Korean? And how would you engage him? Was it a similar technique to you'd used in Italy?
Patrols in the world earlier, really.
So
if you can get in the first surprise, if you can see them before they see you, you've practically won the battle. The element of surprise, because if you fire and roll the ground, you can knock three or four out so quickly, and then you can take over.
Were you still using the 69 grenade?
Yes. Not at all. I mean, if you saw a patrol that you were totally outnumbered, that you couldn't possibly engage without committing suicide, you could throw a 69, let fly with as much ammunition as you could in seconds, and get to hell out of
it. So it sounds like you were using it less than you used it in Italy.
Oh, yes. Yes. Yeah.
Because in Italy, the German patrols were bigger, I think you said.
Germans always send about 90 to 100.
So therefore, that the demoraliser, as you called it, was much more important than when you were meeting
and a... Much more effect on them than it would on a handful of them.
So, hence it was less used.
Less used. The phosphorus grenades, the lads weren't killed on them because they were so dangerous. Bad enough being shot at, but if you shot at with a phosphorus grenade, even if the bullet didn't kill you, the grenade would. So I'm afraid if they were ordered out particularly nice, some of them were thrown.
Would you keep yours?
Personally, I never carried one. I didn't like them. And I was in a position where I met my own mind, unfortunately.
So anything else about patrolling, or are there any particular incidents?
Not really. The same old routine. You always had the permanent standard patrol.
Out in front of the panels?
In line with the panels. But with high features, you must have a standard patrol. Because in the darkness and the heavy mist that fell in that country, horrific mist. It would lie there some mornings at 10 o'clock. You couldn't see a bat. You had to.